Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom, where we examine the art and science of games. We've got a great cast for you tonight. We're going to be catching up with the developer behind Asura. This was the action RPG roguelike based on Indian mythology. I believe we talked earlier in 2017, and since then, the game has recently been expanded on with a free piece of DLC. But let me introduce him back on. So please welcome from Ogrehead Studios, Zane.
Hi, guys. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Zane. It's great to have you back on. How are things going?
Things have been amazing so far. It's been like 3 months since we released the game, 3-4 months. We released in April 14th, Asura. So it's been really great since then. And like you said, we have released the Vengeance expansion 2 weeks ago, and we've got really positive response for that as well. So all in all, it's been an amazing journey so far.
Yeah, and definitely congratulations on the success of Asura. I completely forgot. I knew it came out in 2017, but it feels like it's been like a year or so since we last spoke. That's how crazy time is flying now.
Exactly. I obviously you have like a lot of people coming in your cast, and I follow your channel as well. You have a lot of content that is coming, so I can understand.
But yeah, it's definitely been interesting to see Asura grow, and like I said, it's great to hear that it is doing well, because I have a few friends of mine who are fans of ARPGs, and they're like, what's this Asura? And I was like showing it on stream, and they're like, wow, like it definitely, like, I think for a lot of people, it kind of surprised them with what they're getting in the game. And yeah, it's good to hear that word of mouth and buzz is growing for it.
Yeah, I mean, like when you, we are not like these multi-million sold or a million sold even, but, we are a small team. We have a very low burn rate. So according to that, I mean, it's really doing well for us. It's helping, it's done good enough for us to make our next game and to sustain ourselves. And but that was never a concern, because we already had things going on for us financially. But it's been amazing to hear, like, the best thing is like people saying good things about the game, which is what, as a designer and a developer, I would like to hear. So that's been good. There have been a lot of feedbacks as well. And I don't know whether you know it or not, we patch the game every single week. So we've been trying to improve it in a lot of ways. And it's been an amazing journey. And it's our first game that we have released, right? Like a proper game that we have done by ourselves. So it's been an amazing journey learning, making mistakes, and then learning from them, and then just rectifying the fixes. And it's been an amazing journey so far. So
And for people listening to the cast right now, like I said, Zane and I spoke earlier in 2017, and in that cast we talked more about how Ogrehead got started and a good, like, high level discussion on Asura's game design. And I'll find the link and put it in the description below. But for tonight's cast, we're going to talk more about kind of what happened after Asura came out and the work you guys have done with expanding and improving on it. But before we do that, just in case there are any people listening to this cast who missed our previous one, for those folks, Zane, could you give kind of like the rough pitch of what Asura is?
So Asura is a roguelite hack and slash inspired by Indian mythology, and it has procedurally generated skill tree. And you play as Asura the demon, and you're trying to defeat the enemies which are inspired by gods, gods and of Indian mythology. And you basically play as a demon called Asura, and you're ravaging through the Indian inspired theme. And it's pretty much a roguelike version of what I presumed, how I wanted it to be in an action format, not a turn-based format. So that's pretty much. So if you're into roguelikes, you should definitely check it out. That's what I would say.
Yep, and I would agree with you on that, Zane. And for those of you who are listening to this, I have streamed and have several videos of Asura beating various difficulty levels up on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel now.
Yeah, you actually defeated the Mahasura, the last difficulty, right?
Yeah.
I saw your tweet the other day. That was pretty cool. I saw the video, and I was like, yeah. People can defeat it. People have defeated it. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I was so like impressed with myself, and then I saw like the high score list. I'm like 40th on there. I'm like, how the heck did all those people do so much better on that difficulty?
Yeah, people are literally like going crazy behind like the leaderboards. Like some people are doing some amazing, like so there's this vengeance mode that is out. We'll discuss about that later, of course, but people are going through 600 waves, 700 cool. waves, and you know, obviously they're breaking the game.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, the game is just, the vengeance mode has just been out for 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. So it's not like balanced, like it is balanced in a design sense, but it's not balanced when you see the user experience and stuff like that. There's some things that we have left out, but still it's amazing to see people playing for, like, if you reach 600 waves, that means you're playing the game for 4 hours straight. just that mode. So it's really fun to see people do that, and then, you know, go to the discussion and the forums and stuff like that and discuss how to break the game. And that's what pretty much people are trying to do now. Mm-hmm. Break the game instead of playing the game. So it's been fun. It's been fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over this last year, I've been getting into watching people do speed runs of video games, and it's always fascinating to have that kind of high-level discussion about just figuring out, as you just said, Zane, how to literally just break this game in two in any which way you can.
Yeah, okay, I didn't get your question. I think the voice cut down. Can you please repeat it?
I was just talking about how I was getting into speed running this past year, watching people grow, and seeing how they're just trying to figure out the most optimized way to play through a video game.
Yeah.
Now, I guess with Asura, and in terms of like growing it and such, I guess my first question is, as you said, you guys have been patching the game pretty much routinely since launch. And I know at the beginning of the game, or when I first played it, there was definitely debates about the difficulty. And I just want to ask you about kind of like, how did things go? Like, obviously, I've played through the game, so I've seen things firsthand. But for people listening to this cast, how has the difficulty of Asura grown and changed over the last 4 or 5 months?
So one of the biggest feedbacks that we got were either people were finding like having like for some people, the difficulty was literally very optimized. Mm-hmm. And for some of them, it was like really difficult. We didn't have a midpoint, you know, in the design at that point when it started. So that was the situation when we began it. And later down the line, due to various iterations and various design changes that I made, that I'll explain in a few, you know, as of going ahead in the discussion. I think that now I believe that it has come to that point where it's you know, it has come to this optimal level of difficulty, where each difficulty feels as if, you know, okay, you're not dying because of the game design, but you're dying because of your faults. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of people thought that they were dying because of the game design, because like some features, like, you know, your armor would burning would destroy your armor or your weapon. That was, I think you might remember this. That was in the first gold build, basically, and people hated that feature. People were like, why isn't that you know, dot damage, or like, you know, like overtime damage like in other games, and why does your item have to destroy? And according to me, roguelikes are that, like, it's just that, you know, if you make mistake, if you screw up, you lose things. And I think it was a bit harsh for a lot of people, so we dialed it down. What we did was only in the last difficulty this would happen, like when your item, so that's one way we balanced. Another way was some of the bosses' health were too high for some people, like the incremental, you know, it would not incrementally increase based on a lot of factors. So we dialed down, we fixed a lot of algorithm issues as well, you know, in the skill tree. As you might know, the skill tree is randomly generated. So sometimes people would get really, really bad skills.
Yes.
Or if you know what starts coming is, a lot of people did that as well, where they would then wait for that. They would just start the game, load the game, and then they would see the skill tree, and then they would restart it so that they get the optimal skill tree. So what we did was, when you start the game now, like at this point of time, not earlier, now, you don't get to see the whole skill tree. You don't get to see a skill tree at all. Like once you level up, when you go to that first level, that's when you see the skill tree. So you basically are spending 5 minutes of time to just restart the game. So we completely tried to discourage people from starts coming. And then a lot of other features as well, you know, and there were some know, technical issues as well, like any other game. Mm-hmm. Some collision issues and stuff like that. We fixed, optimized all those issues. We are just a 2-person team. Like the core team is just 2 people in the studio. So we don't have like a huge QA team to test every single feature. We do it ourselves. And we thought that it was optimal. And there were some things which were, you know, kind of a bit broken or which were not that smoothed out. And so we tried to optimize. And now I believe that, it's in a very good condition, especially day before yesterday's patch. I think that is our best stable build. I mean, like in all sense, people are really enjoying it. And I think we have hit that sweet spot now. Yeah.
Good to hear. And yeah, a lot of very interesting things about kind of balancing out Asura. For people listening, as you said, Zane, Asura is built on different difficulty settings, but it's not just about pure stat manipulation, as in, you know, easy enemies have 1 point of health, hard enemies have 4 points of health. You guys have mixed things up with the various difficulties, and the point you said regarding now that burning only exists on the highest difficulty, I think that's very interesting, because as you said, it began on normal. And it's always tricky trying to figure out where do I want the player to go in terms of difficulty. And there's always that perception, there's definitely that perception in terms of like seeing things on different difficulty settings. Like for myself, I know I've said this many times on the cast, but I generally avoid the easy mode or, you know, simple mode, beginner mode, whatever you want to call it. And I will usually start on normal or at least 1 point higher than normal. And when you're trying to cater to multiple skill levels, it's always tricky when you're having like 3, 4, 5 difficulty settings, because it's almost like you're essentially just rebuilding your game that many number of times.
Yeah. Yes, you're exactly right. But the best part about our design is like a roguelike is a very good... It has so many design factors in it that you can really make interesting design decisions which will be unique for each difficulty. At least that's what I learned through my experience building a roguelike. And that's what I loved about roguelike. And I wanted to create a roguelike which was action-oriented. Like most of the roguelike is usually turn-based. And, you know, it has this a bit of a, like a turn-based combat. And I wanted to keep that strategic element as well, where you are actually thinking whom you're attacking, when you're attacking and stuff, like your stamina, you're doing all those stuff, but it's real time and it's fast paced, and you know that's what I wanted to have. Now when it comes to difficulty, I knew that the game is hard for hardcore people. Like if I cater to the really you know, like a casual audience, you know, then the game would not be a roguelike anymore. That's pretty much what it would be. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, being honest with roguelikes, the difficulty is there. The normal is itself is, I believe, above. I mean, for us, it's not that difficult. But for a starter or for someone who's just into roguelikes or who just come into it, for them, it is pretty hard to, you know, first to grasp the mechanics and then play it. But I thought that, you know, only the hardcore people will play this game, like the really hardcore. And when we released the game, it only had normal and it had 3 difficulties at that point of time. And I thought that only the hardcore will play. So the normal itself was pretty hardcore back then. So then we had to dial that down as in we had to. So we never changed the stats. We never made it easier in such a way that, okay, now the boss will only have 10 HP instead of 20, 40 HPs. That's never what we did. We made sure that the algorithm is such that you get to learn the mechanics much more at a slower pace than a higher, you know, like the amount of enemies that spawn or the amount of enemies, the difficulty curve of the enemies that they spawn from. These are some of the attributes that we played with instead of, you know, like you said, just health or damage or, you know, just a stats change and stuff like that. And,
Now, yes, here's a question for you, Zane. Now that Asura has, I think you said, or I just want to make sure I got it right, it has 4 difficulty levels, right? If we count Mahasura.
Yeah, Mahasura is the final difficulty, like the last difficulty, and you have like
So, I guess in your opinion, what do you consider to be like, I guess, the true experience, or what someone, if they enjoy Asura, should they be playing at to get like the full feel of the game?
Asura difficulty is what I think is the final design that I envision the game to be. Mahasura is something that is actually Asura difficulty, but a way more surprise. It has way more surprising element in that all the enemies, even the spawns, are randomly assigned. So you can get any boss in any level. So it was just a remix of Asura difficulty and adding some flavors to it, just for the expansion and to have that fun factor that you don't know what is going to come. So it's for that. But I think that Asura difficulty is the optimal difficulty, and Mahasura is that like really hardcore, just want to challenge yourself kind of mode that you would like to play. Yeah,
and of course, when you introduce that kind of mode to gamers, they will figure out how to be it, no matter how hard you make it.
Yes, of course. That's what I learned, releasing Asura is like, there are people out there who will just go insane to break and to learn how things work, to go to the extent where they are literally like the super pros. They know everything about the game, and it's pretty fun to to see people invest so much time on something that you have worked on, and it's really gratifying.
Now speaking about breaking the game and along those lines, I want to go back to for a second talking about the skill tree and kind of how crazy it is to make that kind of system. So, again, for those of you listening to this cast, Asura features a procedurally generated tree. You have four different categories of skills, but what skills you can get in a game are randomly shuffled, so you'll never know exactly what you're going to get. And as you said, Zane, on one hand, this can create some very hard builds when you're just not getting powerful skills at all. But on the other hand, you can have, I was saying this on stream, I have these like Binding of Isaac moments when like everything comes together and I'm just like going around killing everybody kind of thing. I think my favorite has been like the range when you get the chakram, the one that like bounces across multiple enemies, and just bump that up with like poison and additional damage. And it's just like, floors everybody in the room. So, go ahead.
No, you're saying.
So my question for you, as a designer, how do you, or do you even balance a game when you know you have such wild extremes in terms of your options? Again, you have something that you can have someone play a game and be completely underpowered, or you can have someone just like completely blast through the game in terms of raw power with those skills.
I always use this word randomly or procedure generated, but actually there's a lot of system that is being worked behind so to make sure that at least there is this minimal amount of minimal skill, an optimal build you can build with the skill tree. It is randomly generated, but it has some rules built into it so that you don't get completely downgraded, or you don't like to, because if that happens, you won't play the game, right? And I'm assuming that no matter what kind of skill tree you get, you should be able to finish the game. That's what I believe, and that's how it is, because no matter how good the skills you get, if you're actually really good at the game, you can actually defeat it in low, even if you don't pick the proper skills as well, because everything is telegraphic. The enemies, the stats and everything, it's basically, if you get hit, you take 2 damage, and if you hit them, it's not like Diablo where the stats just keep on incrementally increasing. It's more about how you play it, how you strategize. Even the combat system is like that, not just the skill system. So if you are really good at the combat itself, like you know which weapons to use, which weapons you can buy from the items, how the system works, I think you can beat it in any skill tree. Now, coming to the skill tree and how we have designed it, we have made sure that each and every skill has some kind of, at least I would say it's 80% of the skills are really it really changes the game. It really affects you in a very good manner. It's not like a small thing where you just increase 1 damage or 2 damage or 3 damage. It does something very drastic to your build. And in that fashion, there is no skill which actually, like I said, the 70% of the skills are really good for you. It's not like, if you know what they do and if you try to use them properly, they should be able to properly align with themselves, like with whatever you have, at least the 70% of them. The 30% of them that I have added is actually, by intention, that everything should not be very powerful in, as soon as you pick it, but they still have some kind of, a background advantages that you will have. But that's what, instead of like a skill system where in Diablo, if you know, for example, let me take an example of a barbarian. Mm-hmm. Okay, he has some skills which are really bad in level one, but eventually when you start, I'm speaking about Diablo 2. So when you pick that skill and then we keep on investing it, eventually it becomes like a really good skill. I don't know if you know. No, yeah. There are certain skills like that, but in Asura there is no skill like this. As soon as you pick it, it's gonna give you some adverse effect. So at least the 70% of them are really good skills, I would like to believe. So there is, if you really know the game inside out, or if you know the game, you know, pretty well, you should be able to manage yourself. And that is one way of, you know, we made sure that no one gets, really bad kind of builds. Another way was, you know, there are certain combinations which are not really good. So there is a system in place where we make sure that, you know, it's pseudo random. It's not like completely random, I would say. So there are certain skills which would not come with other skills. Or if you don't have certain, it will never be like you never will get an active skill. There are active and passives, right? So it's there is a 1% chance or a 0.5% chance that the randomness system or the procedural system might throw a seed value which will give you no passives, no active skills at all. But that will never happen. The system will take care of that. So all these variables make sure that, you know, 90% of the time you really have at least an optimal skill tree. But yes, sometimes you really get that amazing skill tree, and that's what roguelikes is about, right? Like sometimes you just have, but still you need to learn what the game is, how the system works, you know, that is definitely required. And even if you have the best of the skills, if you don't know how to use them, or if you don't know how to dodge enemies, you're not going to reach very far. You're not going to reach very far if you spam. So things like that, I think, makes it interesting. And I think, yeah, That's how we have balanced. We have tried to balance the game at least. It's all about trial and error at the end of the day. It's not like 100% there. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, a question for you, Zane. Since Asura was released, have you guys done any additional tweaking or modifying of the skills?
Oh, definitely. A lot of them, actually. If you know, there's a skill called split shot. It's not called split shot. It's a Sanskrit word. But basically what it does is, when you activate that skill, your arrows split into six, you know, it splits and shoots itself into six arrows. And what you could do was you could go really close to the enemy, like a boss. And if you would use that skill, you would hit all that six arrows into that single enemy, and it would be like you would get insane damage output. So we have changed that. We have made sure that that does not happen. Then there were some there was another issue, like sometimes so in Asura the recharge system does not work like other game, where when you use the skills, there's a time based, you know, usually the cooldowns are time based, right? Like once you, if you play Dota or any other, you know, RPG, if you use a skill, you have to wait for 2 minutes or 1 minute or 60 seconds. In Asura, that does not happen. If you use a skill, you have to kill the enemy and you have to recharge your skill. So for example, if you have a lightning strike skill, you'll have to kill six enemies to recharge it and use it again. So there were some skills, like, for example, there was this skill called Maraka, where you would transform into this avatar of Maraka, which when you transformed would kill an enemy in a single strike. So if when you would activate Maraka, it would go into cooldown. Like, for example, you have to kill 10 enemies. And when you use that skill, and when you kill 10 enemies within that skill, the skill would get recharged. And that should not happen, right? Like that would, like you would keep on using the skill then. So then we brought in the system where this does not happen. And there were sometimes, earlier you could use stack different shields. Sometimes, you know, there were certain shields that we missed out. So things like that. And, that we have changed. We have never changed the core philosophy behind a skill, like the core idea behind the skill, but we had to tweak around the design elements to make sure that it works really well. And recently we found another issue where there was this bouncing glaive, this boomerang, which would bounce among walls. So people would use split shot.
Oh, no.
And people would use that. And then they would kill the main boss in 5 seconds. Like this guy who killed the main boss in 2 seconds. And I was like, what? What is happening over here? And we never, I don't know how did we miss that, but we just fixed it last week. And so things like that. And it's fun, man. I mean, these guys are really hardcore. No matter what you do, they will still beat the game. They can beat the game hands down. But it's still fun to see, like, the certain combination. And that's why we wanted to do a procedural skill tree, right? Like, we wanted this idea of really people doing some crazy stuff and experiencing new combos and stuff like that. So Yeah. So, but we have changed, you know, all these, like I said, not the core philosophy of the skill, but we have worked or tweaked around the design of it to make sure that everything is optimal and the experience is optimal. Yeah.
And as a funny aside, I don't think I ever got that split shot skill in any of my plays yet. So now I feel jealous. I'll never get to see the bouncing glaive in action like that.
Oh, we had been. So if you play now the game, it actually says that this skill does not work with boomerang. So it actually would not work with boom. It would not work with the magic, you know, those magic weapons, yeah, like those one that you shoot. So it would never work with that. So now we have also included boomerang into it. So yeah, it is balanced, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's always tricky when it comes to tweaking these abilities. Because as we've said, you can see wildly different builds and strategies, especially when you're dealing with a procedurally generated skill tree like that.
Yes, I mean, not only, yeah, the skill tree is procedural, and obviously the items are random. So there are so many permutations and combinations. Like you said, you could use that chakram, and then you could use that skill where, you know, you randomly cast magic. So basically your chakram is hitting everyone, and then you're casting lightning strike, you're casting a meteor strike, and then you have this poison ability inside that, you know, you have used that skill as well. So there are a lot of combinations, permutations that's happening, and then you can purchase items from the shop which will give you some advantages as well. But yeah, you know, whenever we feel as if, you know, there is something which is not justified through design, and that's not how I wanted this item to work even in my wildest dreams, that's when I really go and tweak things. I don't, you know, if something is really, you know, I accept imbalance in good ways, but when it's like, it's not really fun and it could be abused in a very, you know, easy way, then that's when you have to really go and sit in and think as to how you can, you know, tweak it to make sure that you have an optimal experience, because then it becomes too easy for some people and that's not always fun. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess with that, let's talk a little bit about the Vengeance expansion and what it meant to expand on Asura over the last few months. So, for people listening to this cast, by the time this goes up, it will probably be at least a month, maybe a little bit more, since the Vengeance expansion was released on Steam. So, yeah. My question for you, or my next question for you, Zane, is when you guys sat down to start thinking about how to expand Asura, what was kind of like your major philosophy for that?
So the first thing was, like, obviously we wanted to fix some of the issues which could not be fixed through patches. You know, these were the major fixes, like some collision. No, these are just the fixes I'm saying, not the expansion stuff, not the content stuff. But then we realized, like, some things we could not be fixed through patches. It would require some groundwork to it, so that the experience is much better, because we got some really amazing feedbacks, seeing people play as well as hearing people share their ideas and stuff like that. So we accumulated all these fixes that we wanted to do and these ideas that people shared. And one of the, you know, things that people said was, like, they wanted an unlimited mode where they could have fun after finishing the game as well. So we thought of adding arena mode, not as an it's just called expansion, but it's not like a DLC or anything. I would say it's called an expansion because it really adds a lot of content to the game, but in the industry term, it's not really, you know, you're not paying for it. It's just a very large update, I would say. It was like a version 2.0. it was not like, you know, a DLC where we charged anything, and it's not even called a DLC actually in the game itself. So people told us that they wanted an unlimited mode. So that was one thing that we factored in, where we could figure out a way to, you know, after finishing the game, if you just want to have fun for a bit of time and just want to see how crazy you can get, the unlimited mode. That's why we did the Vengeance mode. People wanted to have some, you know, our folks wanted to have new rooms as well and some more RNG systems inside. So that's why we came up with the three new rooms for the game. I don't know whether you have encountered them. The Devale, the Pasa, and another one. The I forgot the name. There's the shrine that you get. The shrine, yeah. Which curses, or, you know. So all these kind of new rooms. So the Pasa is kind of where you gamble with the Sona that you get for, you know, extra money. And the shrine is somewhere, you know, where you can either get blessed by the gods, get blessed by the demon gods, or you can get a curse from the, you know, from the gods as well. So that was kind of another system that we wanted to add to kind of mix up the RNG. And one more thing that we wanted to add was the Shamshan, which was like kind of, you know, if you want to save your character that you really like, that you thought that, you know, you really did very well with it, or you really like your skill build, then you could actually, now you can actually save your character and show off with your friends or whoever you want. You can print screen it. So that was another thing that we added. And what else did we add in this vengeance mode? And the chakra system, of course. I forgot about the chakra system. So people, we also wanted to have some... So, you know, there are already a lot of roguelites and roguelikes in the market. And usually they have persistence system, right? Like, they have some kind of persistence system where you save some things. But I don't really wanted to do... Or we don't really wanted to do that with Asura, where, you know, you get some awesome items or you actually enhance your base character. And I wanted to have that philosophy of roguelikes where every time you start... Everyone starts at the same... you know, mm-hmm. juncture. But there's this new system that we added called as a chakra system, which when you would kill bosses, would give you one. So for example, if you kill a boss called Mahabala, he gives you a chakra where you don't use any stamina. You don't lose any stamina when you're running or when you're holding a hammer. So you can use this chakra in your next run to your advantage. It was like a perk system. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that we added in the chakra system. And obviously there were new items. So all in all, what we wanted to do was, we are patching this game so many times, right? And we thought that, okay, now we have run out of like these small fixes. And now we would really want to make some design changes or some additions to the design as well. And that's why, you know, we thought that, okay, let's call it a Vengeance expansion, because we are adding a new level as well, a new mode as well, and it's expanding on the game. So it was just a thing, and it's, you know, it was just this idea that we had, and which we thought that, okay, it would fit well in an expansion instead of, you know, just regular updates. Mm-hmm. So that's why we called it that. And another thing was, the game also released in Japan, like locally with their own language. Like, we have a publisher in Japan who helped us do that. Their name is Dangan Entertainment, really cool guys. And so that was also happening. So, you know, it was kind of like a fresh, fresh way to introduce to them as well. Okay, there's a new expansion coming. And so I thought that it would be cool to introduce it like this. That's pretty much the philosophy that we had for the game, but for the expansion, sorry.
And the new chakra system, the passive buffs, that is turned off on Masura mode, right?
Yeah, Masura mode, you don't... that's like the ultimate mode where everyone is in their base level. I think in Asura mode also. You don't get to pick it in Asura mode as well. Mm-hmm. The chakra system. So that's how I want you to, if you're really good at it, that's how we would like you to play the game, like with nothing. And so that's why.
And the new rooms that you introduced with the expansion, as you mentioned, there's the new shrine that can either buff or debuff you. One room that I liked was it had like the anvil in that you get to choose from one of three buffs. And I think one thing's that I think all this does that really helps Asura, and of course helps any roguelike based game, is it adds more variance to playing the game.
Yes.
And that is always a very important part of these games. It's one of the reasons why I always keep coming back to the Binding of Isaac with each new expansion, because it's not adding like time to the game, as in it takes a 40-minute run and turns into an hour and a half. It's just making each one of those plays feel dramatically different.
Yes, that is why, I mean, if you're a roguelike fan, that's why you're playing the roguelike, right? Like, you really like the experience more than the endpoint. Yes, you want to beat the final boss, but that experience should be awesome, right? Like, you want to have something, this really cool run that you had, or some crazy combination that you're looking for. So expanding, in a way, like adding new levels is fun, is good. But I think more than that, what Asura needed at this point of time was more variance in individual runs. Mm-hmm. And that's why we went ahead and added these rooms called as Amrit, which is like a goblet of holy water, which you kind of corrupt by spilling your blood inside it. And then it pops out four random droplings, which are kind of like, you know, drops which you get from characters. Mm-hmm. So you basically kind of sacrifice your blood and corrupt the well, and then you get some items. So things like this, like the Pasa, like I told you, the dice game. And, you know, it's a shrine which buffs or debuffs you, and the Anvil of Vardhan, which basically That was my way of, you know, kind of, you know, in every RPG, there is some, in some form or the other, you try to tweak your base stats, right? So Anvil of Verdun was kind of my way of saying that, okay, you can tweak your base stats as well through Anvil of Verdun, because that's what it pretty much does. It increases one of your base stats. So yeah, that was the philosophy behind that. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with a lot of the... Oh, one thing I definitely wanted to touch on with you, Zane, regarding one thing that I noticed that seemed at least very different from when I originally played Asura to when I played with Avengers expansion, was that it felt like I was picking up a lot more artifacts, which, for people listening to this cast, the artifacts are essentially passive items that you keep in your inventory, and they give you various buffs, you know, poison damage, increased melee damage, and so on. Did you guys add in more artifacts with the Vengeance expansion?
Yes, so we have not added any weapons or armors. We have not added any weapons or armors as such in the expansion, because that was already there. We had a good roster of items in there. What we really wanted was these items called artifacts or droplings, which would drop from enemies when you scavenge, because that's what I felt. I thought that was was kind of repetitive, because you have the system where you either absorb your enemies or you scavenge your enemies, right? It's not like other RPGs where when you kill, you get item and you get XP. So in Asura, what happens is when you kill an enemy, you can either absorb or scavenge. Absorb sucks the soul, you gain experience. Scavenge rips their body, you get the items that they drop. So you have to decide. It's like a strategic thing. And the more you play, the more you understand how the system works. But the droplings did not have enough items. Mm-hmm. So what we did, the scavenging did not have enough items. So that's why we went ahead and added all these new items or droplings. So we have added about, like, if I'm not mistaken, 40 or 50 new artifacts or droplings. And from things from consumables to artifacts, not only artifacts, right? They're consumable items as well, like meat and things like that. So now what we have added is bhang, we have added paan, all these new items which are inspired by Indian terms and words, these new consumables that you can use to tweak your stats, and artifacts which you can keep in your inventory to enhance your stats, like in Diablo you would keep charms, right? It's something like that. So yeah, we expanded on that as well. Yeah. In the Vengeance expansion. Yeah.
And I agree with you, Zane, that it definitely helped to flesh out, well, I guess no pun intended, the scavenge option, because I think in my original play, I would just always absorb, because it always felt like going up in level was the stronger of the two options. But yes, the artifacts have definitely helped to mix that up.
Yes, that's exactly was what our goal was with adding new items inside, in not the weapons, but items in the scavenge list. And we as moving ahead, we'll be adding more as well, so that it's much more, you know, more variant than what it is now. So yeah.
Now, one other question for you, Zane. You said a few seconds ago that you didn't add in any new weapons or armor with the Avengers expansion.
Yes.
I'm noticing, yes, since I started replaying the game with the expansion on, that the bosses are rewarding with new weapons that are added to the randomization of the procedural generation on subsequent plays.
Yes.
Are those items brand new?
They are not brand. They didn't actually... they are not added in the Vengeance expansion. They were added in a patch which was very close to Vengeance expansion, actually.
Okay.
So what would happen was, you know, in the first build also, these items used to get unlocked. Okay, but you would never see it because we never told you this in front. Mm-hmm. You know, we never had a UI for it saying that, okay, you're getting unlocks as such. So what we thought was, why are we wasting our content? When a thing is getting unlocked, let's just show it to our players so that it feels gratifying. So what we did was this the items was already there inside the RNG. But we had to show it to you, like how it's, so when you kill a boss, basically, it shows what kind of chakra you unlock now, it shows what kind of item you unlock now, and stuff like that. Earlier, that would not happen.
Okay.
So now it just comes, so now you feel as if, you know, things are getting unlocked. And so that's the kind of change that the Vengeance expansion has brought. But actually, we introduced this, I think, with the gold, with the original build as well. But it was not so upfront, I would say.
And I think that was a smart move on your guys' part to kind of drop the curtain on that. Because it's always nice as the player to know that I did X and I was rewarded with Y.
Yes, exactly. And that was our point. Like, what we thought earlier was like, you know, it's not that surprising when you see that this item has unlocked, because unlike other games, excluding roguelikes, when you would get a thing unlocked, you would get to use it immediately. Mm-hmm. Like for a God of War, when you unlock something, that means that, okay, now from here on, you can use that weapon. But if we do that, where every time, the first time you play, if the enemy drops that item, then, you know, everyone has the same run mm-hmm. in the first run, right? Yeah. Like everyone would have the same experience the first time they go, at least the item drop wise. So we didn't want to do that in the beginning, but then we thought that, okay, let's just forget about it. Binding of Isaac is doing it. Like when you discover a new item, it shows, and other games also do it. So we thought like, okay, let's just introduce this so that people actually feel a sense of progression, that they're unlocking new stuff as well. So yeah, that's why we added it eventually. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, there's been a lot of tweaks, a lot of mistakes made.
Oh, right now, I guess as a quick tangent for you, Zane, you mentioned a few minutes ago that Asura got translated and ported over to Japan. Was that right around, or was that right at the Vengeance expansion release, or before that?
Yeah, Vengeance expansion introduced the Japanese language, yeah. So, Vengeance expansion came with the Japanese language.
Okay. My question is, how has Asura been doing in Japan? Because it's always interesting to see these games be ported to completely different markets.
It's been really good. It's been really like we already had some of our fans from Japan, but they would always say that obviously the skill tree was kind of very confusing for them. So the Japanese version has brought a lot of the Japanese version. Or the Japanese language has helped us get a lot of people on board with Asura. Not really big, but it has been doing pretty well, mm-hmm. I would say. And thanks to a publisher and, you know, and their support, they have been doing amazingly. They've been supporting us amazingly so that, you know, we get the localization done properly. Our announcements that we make are also localized so that, you know, it's not biased as such. So all in all, it has been really fun. A fun experience. So before Japanese, we had like when the game released, it released in Chinese and English, right? So in China also, we have a publisher who helped us, and that was also an amazing experience. We actually have, you know, 40-50% of our audience is Chinese, so that is there. Mm-hmm. A lot of hardcore people from there as well. So it's really amazing to see all these, you know, people come in and have fun. Mm-hmm. From different places, and they're actually enjoying the Indian mythos, that flavor that we have added. So it's really good to see the feedback. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember in our last chat, we talked about how, again, as someone over here in the United States, it was very fascinating to see this side of mythology as someone who wasn't originally exposed to it.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, Asura is like, it's just an Indian flavor, I would say, in mythological sense as well. Like, we are inspired by a lot of elements from the Indian mythology, but nothing is like, you know, hardcore, kind of, what can I use? Like a literal translation of the actual mythology. It's like I've taken cues from the mythology and hyper-fantasized it and used our own imagination to tell you a story in a roguelike fashion. So, but I hope that it's a fresh take on, you know, the genre, kind of, you know, at least thematically, and what you don't see usually, and the cinematic and the whole style of how it all works. And I hope people enjoy it.
Let me check our time for a second. We're about 40 minutes in. I figure probably have a few more questions for you, and we'll especially talk about kind of what you're hoping to do next at Ogrehead and Asura. So we touched on the Vengeance, the wave-based mode a few minutes ago, but I just want to talk a little bit more about it here. I guess in terms of its design, how did you guys think about or build, like, what you wanted out of the mode? Because, again, Asura by itself is obviously a roguelike. It's not really meant for, like, just 100% combat. There's, of course, the progression side. Yes. So how did you kind of, I guess, work that into the Vengeance wave mode?
So the core game, when you play the game, the core gameplay is going, exploring room to room, and kill enemies, level up, or get items, get stronger, kill harder enemies. That's how the progression works, like roguelikes, right? But you strategize it. So, but our end goal was to make a system which was Never Ending, which was never ending for people who wanted that kind of fun, where they would try to see how far they could go. Now, one way of doing this was actually looping the level. Like, you know, when you finish the
game. New
Game Plus, as in, yeah. I mean, in the same session, like if you have played Nuclear Throne, it kind of loops itself. Mm-hmm. You go back and you play it from the first level. But I felt that that was kind of, you know, not really fun. I don't know how to put it, but I just don't want the design to be like that. I wanted it to be an experience, because it had taken us a lot of time to balance this, you know, in that fashion itself. So I thought that why not make a new mode wherein instead of you going through room to room, you're basically clearing the arena and you're leveling up. Now, in a way, that was also boring, because, you know, you're absorbing, you're scavenging, you're getting items. But in Asura, in the Vengeance mode, what we tried to do was you don't get items from drops at all. Like, scavenging will give you only gold. And then there is a shop system which you have to upgrade so that, you know, you can buy new and better weapons. So that's how we kept the progression, in a sense that if you want to buy weapons in the game, like in the normal game, you have to actually go to the shop or you have to find those items in the level. Over here, you know what all items you will get. So you actually have that, you know, you can actually strategize about that, like how you want to go about doing it. So this was more of that kind of experience where we're trying to optimize your stats in a much more fashion, much more better fashion, and trying to, you know, destroy as many enemies as possible. And one way of, like I said, what we did was after every wave, you get this 60 seconds of time to go to the shop, get yourself ready, decked out, buy items, do all that stuff, and then start the next wave. And the enemy health and damage will increase incrementally. So up till a certain wave, it'll increase according to the levels inside the game, like level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, Fortress 1, Fortress 2, Fortress 3, Fortress 4, Fortress 5. And then it keeps on increasing still. Like, it will keep on increasing as much as you survive the waves. So it was for that kind of experience. And obviously, if you have played Warcraft 3, and if you have played this, I forgot the name of the map. If you were ever interested in playing the mods in Warcraft 3, there were a lot of maps that people used to make. And one of the map was, I don't remember exactly the name, but it was called King of Fighters or something like that. Okay, where you would defeat the waves and get items from shops and stuff like that. And it was kind of inspired from there as well. So all in all, but our end goal was to make the system wherein you could test your mettle and try to defeat the, where you could keep on playing the game endlessly. Mm-hmm. So I hope, obviously when it's not balanced, people broke it. And I think the last build, we got it right. But there's still some fixes to be done. So we are doing that at the moment. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And the waves in Vengeance mode, are they set or are they random?
They're again, it's pseudo random.
Okay.
Like, you won't get like have you ever encountered a healer unit?
Yes, I have.
So if you know, like, only one healer unit can spawn in a wave, and certain enemies can only two of them can come. So there are things which are obviously added, you know, that the system is there to make sure that you don't completely deadlock yourself into a situation. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess this is my luck, then. When I play Vengeance Mode for the first time, on the very second wave, it spawned the final boss of the game as the enemy. That was just perfect, then.
Yeah, so Vengeance Mode is for those who have already completed the game, right? So, they already experienced the final boss and everything. So, even if the final boss comes in the third wave, you can kind of defeat him, because he's not that powerful. His health is not that high. It's balanced in such a way that you can defeat with your normal weapons as well. But the fun is still there. The fun of dodging and, trying to evade his attack patterns and trying to... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the RNG does win over your skills.
Yes.
but eventually you get to realize, like, which character to use in Vengeance mode and which skills to use, because some skills are really good in Vengeance mode which are not that great in the single player, and some items are really good because you know all the items that you can purchase, right? So you can really strategize yourself with the skills that you have. So in that fashion, I think it has a different kind of strategy. But, you know, if someone does not like that kind of system where, you know, you keep on killing waves, like Horde mode, it's not for them. It's for them who really enjoy this kind of, you know, system where you try to defeat as many waves as possible. And there are some people who like it, some people who don't, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so, I've never been a big fan of like wave-based progression. I've always been more of the, you know, give me a start, middle, end point. Let me work my way through it, kind of guy.
Yes, yes. I mean, I'm also, I can play these kind of modes like once in a while.
Yeah.
It's not something that, you know, you just play Asura for. And that was never what it meant to be. It was just like this fun thing that you would, if you have some time, if you want to just try what it is, how it plays. And it's just that kind of addition. And hopefully going ahead, we can maybe add more variation or interesting mechanics to that as well. And that's our hope. But at the end, it's just free for you to be there. Mm-hmm. And just another mode for you to enjoy. That's all. Nothing really hardcore.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to my final set of questions, there's one, I guess, category that I want to touch on with you, Zane. And then we'll kind of move on. And that has to do with a few of the quality of life improvements I saw with Asura. And again, I don't know if these came out with the Vengeance expansion or were these done beforehand. But I just want to run through these with you quickly, and then I just want to get your thoughts on kind of implementing them in the game.
So, all right.
They were the ability to actually run. Like, I didn't notice that in the first version of Asura, but you can now hold down the button for rolling, and now you're actually running. And, of course, this drains stamina. There's the teleport option. You can now set up a portal in any place where you were at and then return to that. So if you find the boss door, but you still want to explore, you can simply just teleport back once you've set it down. And, of course, the option to the option to break down any item you find for one point of currency rather than just leaving the item on the ground. So, were these options added with the Vengeance expansion, or were they added in previous patches?
No, these were added in previous patches. Okay. These were added, like, incrementally, depending on feedback, based on feedback and the various amazing ideas that we got from our community. And not only that, so like some people told us that, you know, sometimes I really want to explore the levels, but in higher difficulties, the level is so big that I just want to storm the boss. What should I do? So we were like, okay, we'll help you with this teleporter. You can place this teleporter wherever you want, and it does not cost you anything. It's just there for you to help. And you can just place it. You can break it if you hold it down, and you can place it somewhere else. You could do whatever you want to do with it. So that was kind of a system that we added for this kind of feedback that we got. And for like you said, salvage, basically. You can salvage items for one sona, one gold. That was basically like sometimes you would see all these items, you know, that you have dropped, which you could not use because you have limited amount of space in your inventory. And that would just go to waste. So people shared with us this kind of problems that they had. So we thought that why don't we use this mechanic where you just press and hold down another button and you can destroy that weapon and you get one gold, better than nothing, right? Like, we didn't want to really give you like 5 gold or something because then that would break the game. But this is like, if you want to do it, you can do it. It really helps sometimes, you know. Sometimes when you have that 48 gold and you are in front of a shop and you want that 50 gold for you to purchase that item which increases your damage for 50 and you don't have that. And then, so what do? You just open your inventory, break 2 of your meat that you can get anyways, and then you can, you know, get your item and be happy about it. So that was kind of a system that we added. And then which one? The run system was another thing. Like, we had this B button which was lying there, like in the controller and even in PC. Like, we had this thing, and we said that we have the stamina system. Running makes sense. People were saying that sometimes it's kind of boring to, you know, just walk. I want to run. And we were like, okay, we'll make you run. Just made a couple of tweaks to the animation, and now you run with your weapon. But it drains your stamina, though.
Mm-hmm.
So with that mechanic added, we could add 2 more skills as well. One which would not reduce your stamina when you run. And then there's this chakra which would not reduce your stamina when you run. So it only helps us, you know, improve the game, like with all these feedbacks and stuff, and increase the content that we have. So it's always amazing. But these features came in incrementally through patches and not through Vengeance expansion, I would say. Yeah.
No, not a problem. So I think with that, I'm about out of questions, at least for the expansion. I think we can probably move on to our final group of questions regarding the future. But before we do that, are there any elements of the Vengeance expansion that we didn't touch on that you would like to bring up now?
I think you pretty much covered every single thing. We spoke about everything, so that was fun. Yeah.
Awesome.
We did everything, yeah.
All right. So with that, we'll move on to our final set of questions. And when we say goodbye, Zane, just hang on for like a minute or two after the recording is over. I'll have a few questions for you while it's encoding.
Okay.
But I guess, as we said, by the time you're listening to this podcast right now, the Avengers expansion will probably have been out for about a month, maybe a little bit more than that. So for you and the rest of Ogrehead, what do you think is next for the studio?
So at this point of time, we are actually working on a couple of prototypes, trying to figure out, because the way we design games is through gameplay, I would say. Mm-hmm. So we first nail down the mechanics that we would love to have, then add theme to it instead of coming with the story and the whole kind of aesthetic of the game. We come up with the gameplay and mechanics. So we are trying out a couple of prototypes to make to look for some interesting mechanics that we can come up with for our next game. We have a general idea, but it's too early to speak about it. But we are definitely have started work on the next game as well. And obviously, we are supporting Asura as much as we can, trying to add new content, fixing stuff, rebalancing it, following our community. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think you'll work on an actual full expansion to Asura?
We have to plan that. I mean, we just finished this expansion and it was kind of like really a lot of work.
Yeah.
So at this point of time, we are just supporting it very, just doing the patches and fixes. And we've really not thought about how to go about doing the next, if you ever want to do a big, big expansion, like a DLC or stuff like that. But we are definitely having a conversation on that as well. And let's see how the future holds and how we'd like to.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Asura will be ported to any other platforms like console, or do you think that you've reached like the max point for, I guess, portability or putting on the multiple platforms?
It's all about the resource. Like how we are just two people over here. So it's about how we can use the resources that we have in the best way possible, right? We would love to have it on all platforms. Like we have Asura on Linux, Mac, Windows, GOG, Humble. We have tried to add it wherever we could. And we would love to have it in PlayStation, Xbox, Switch. And just wanted to tell you that we are partners with all the platforms. We are actually, we have all the stuff. It's just us taking that decision. And there are some legality issues as well, with which I can't really go through because of our region where we are from and things like that. We would love to do it. We would love to get into all the consoles because the game works amazingly well with the controller, right? Like, we would love to do that, but it's all about like resource. Where do we allocate our resource and how we should do it smartly? So we are still in discussion with that, like how we'll go about doing it. We should have some news soon, hopefully, about all this.
All right. I think with that, I am just about out of questions for you, Zane. So I believe it is probably time to wrap things up. We are recording this on a Saturday afternoon, at least Saturday afternoon by my time. I know with the time difference, it's probably late Saturday night where you're at, right?
Yeah, it's almost going to be Sunday in like half an hour.
Yeah, so I won't keep you too long. So, so I think we'll say goodnight here. I guess final questions then for you. I guess, do you have any like final thoughts or anything you'd like to say to the fans listening to the cast?
If you enjoyed what we just discussed, or if you like roguelikes, or if you'd like to see a roguelike with Indian mythology, definitely check out Asura. And that's pretty much it. And share your feedback, I would love to hear it. Yep.
Great. So I think with that, we will wrap things up for this week. So again, Zane, thank you so much for coming back on. And again, congratulations with the success of Asura. And I can't wait to see what else comes from Ogrehead in the future.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I had a wonderful time with you, with the discussions. You have some amazing questions as always. And it's always amazing to discuss design. And it's really something that I really love and passionate about. And
me too.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
Yep, not a problem. So, for those of you listening, be sure to check out Asura on Steam. There should be a link to it in the description below. If you want to watch my footage of it, it is available on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. But with all that said, thank you for tuning into this week's cast. If you like to support Game Wisdom and what I do, we have several options available. You can follow me on Twitter at GWBicer for updates throughout the day. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future guest for either our live or recorded cast, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. We are always looking for new people to talk to. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/GWBicer. Your donations can help to keep things going and allow us to add new content. And for $5 or more, you can get VIP status, which gets you voting privileges, private access on our Discord channel, and more. So, with that said, for you, Zane, are there any places you would like to give a shout out to, like Twitter, Facebook, yeah, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. If you'd like to follow what we are doing and what we are up to, or if you'd like to keep up with the updates for Asura, you can just go to, on our Twitter, which is @AsuraTheGame, mm-hmm, or our company, our studio Twitter, which is @OgreheadStudio. And and in Facebook, it's the same, AsuraTheGame and OgreheadStudio, if you'd like to just keep updated about what we are doing the latest. So, yep, that's pretty much it.
All right. So, with that said, again, thank you for tuning into this week's cast. Have a great rest of the week, and I will talk to you again next time. Take care.
Bye-bye, guys. Bye. Bye, Josh.
Bye-bye.